The Fellowship of the Ring, Cassette 12.
When the full light of the morning came, no signs of the wolves were to be found, and they looked in vain for the bodies of the dead. No trace of the fight remained but the charred trees and the arrows of Legolas lying on the hilltop. All were undamaged, save one of which only the point was left.
"It is as I feared," said Gandalf. "They were no ordinary wolves hunting for food in the wilderness. Let us eat quickly and go."
That day the weather changed again, almost as if it was at the command of some power that had no longer any use for snow, since they had retreated from the pass, a power that wished now to have a clear light in which things that moved in the wild could be seen from far away. The wind had been turning through north to northwest during the night, and now it failed. The clouds vanished southwards, and the sky was opened high and blue. As they stood upon the hillside, ready to depart, a pale sunlight gleamed over the mountaintops.
"We must reach the doors before sunset," said Gandalf, "or I fear we shall not reach them at all. It's not far, but our path may be winding, for here Aragorn cannot guide us. He has seldom walked in this country, and only once have I been under the west wall of Moria, and that was long ago." "There it lies," he said, pointing away south-eastwards to where the mountain's sides fell sheer into the shadows of their feet. In the distance could be dimly seen a line of bare cliffs, and in their midst, taller than the rest, one great grey wall. "When we left the pass, I led you southwards, and not back to our starting point, as some of you may have noticed. It's well that I did so, for now we have several miles less to cross, and haste is needed. Let us go." "I do not know which to hope," said Boromir grimly, "that Gandalf will find what he seeks, or that coming to the cliff we shall find the gates lost for ever. All choices seem ill, and to be caught between wolves and the wall the likeliest chance. Lead on."
Gimli now walked ahead by the wizard's side, so eager was he to come to Moria. Together they led the company back towards the mountains. The only road of old to Moria from the west had lain along the course of a stream, the Sirannon, that ran out from the feet of the cliffs near where the doors had stood. But either Gandalf was astray, or else the land had changed in recent years, for he did not strike the stream where he looked to find it, only a few miles southwards from their start. The morning was passing towards noon, and still the company wandered and scrambled in a barren country of red stones. Nowhere could they see any gleam of water or hear any sound of it. All was bleak and dry. Their heart sank. They saw no living thing, and not a bird was in the sky. But what the night would bring, if it caught them in that lost land, none of them cared to think. Suddenly Gimli, who had pressed on ahead, called back to them. He was standing on a knoll and pointing to the right. Hurrying up, they saw below them a deep and narrow channel. It was empty and silent, and hardly a trickle of water flowed among the brown and red-stained stones of its bed. But on the near side there was a path, much broken and decayed, that wound its way among the ruined walls and paving-stones of an ancient high-road.
"Ah, here it is at last," said Gandalf. "This is where the stream ran. Sirannon, the gate stream, they used to call it. But what has happened to the water, I cannot guess. It used to be swift and noisy. Come, we must hurry on. We are late."
The company were footsore and tired, but they trudged doggedly along the rough and winding track for many miles. The sun turned from the noon and began to go west. After a brief halt and a hasty meal, they went on again. Before them the mountains frowned, but their path lay in a deep trough of land, and they could see only the higher shoulders and the far eastward peaks. At length they came to a sharp bend. There the road, which had been veering southwards between the brink of the channel and a steep fall of the land to the left, turned and went due east again. Rounding the corner they saw before them a low cliff, some 5 fathoms high, with a broken and jagged top. Over it a trickling water dripped, through a wide cleft that seemed to have been carved out by a fall that had once been strong and full.
"Indeed things have changed," said Gandalf, "but there's no mistaking the place. There is all the remains of the stair falls. If I remember right, there was a flight of steps cut in the rock at their side, but the main road wound away left and climbed with several loops up to the level ground at the top. There used to be a shallow valley beyond the falls right up to the walls of Moria, and the Cyrannon flowed through it with the road beside it. Let us go and see what things are like now."
They found the stone steps without difficulty, and Gimli sprang swiftly up them, followed by Gandalf and Frodo. When they reached the top, they saw that they could go no further that way, and the reason for the drying up of the gate stream was revealed. Behind them the sinking sun filled the cool western sky with glimmering gold. Before them stretched a dark, still lake. Neither sky nor sunset was reflected on its sullen surface. The Cyrannon had been dammed and had filled all the valley. Beyond the ominous water were reared vast cliffs, their stern faces pallid in the fading light, final and impassable. No sign of gate or entrance, nor a fissure or crack could Frodo see in the frowning wall.
"There are the walls of Moria," said Gandalf, pointing across the water, "and there the gate stood once upon a time, the elven door at the end of the road from Holin, by which we've come. But this way is blocked. None of the company, I guess, will wish to swim this gloomy water at the end of the day. It has an unwholesome look."
"We must find a way round the northern edge," said Gimli. "The first thing for the company to do is to climb up by the main path and see where that will lead us. Even if there were no lake, we could not get our baggage pony up this stair."
"But in any case we cannot take the poor beast into the mines," said Gandalf. "The road under the mountains is a dark road, and there are places narrow and steep which he cannot tread, even if we can."
"Poor old Bill," said Frodo. "I hadn't thought of that. And poor Sam, I wonder what he'll say."
"I'm sorry," said Gandalf. "Poor Bill has been a useful companion, and it goes to my heart to turn him adrift now. I would have travelled lighter and brought no animal, least of all this one that Sam is fond of. If I had had my way, I feared all along that we should be obliged to take this road."
The day was drawing to its end, and cold stars were glinting in the sky high above the sunset, when the company, with all the speed they could, climbed up the slopes and reached the side of the lake. In breadth it looked to be no more than 2 or 3 furlongs at the widest point. How far it stretched away southward they could not see in the failing light, but its northern end was no more than 1/2 mile from where they stood, and between the stony ridges that enclosed the valley and the water's edge there was a rim of open ground. They hurried forward, for they had still 1 or 2 miles to go before they could reach the point on the far shore that Gandalf was making for, and then he had still to find the doors. When they came to the northernmost corner of the lake, they found a narrow creek that barred their way. It was green and stagnant, thrust out like a slimy arm towards the enclosing hills. Gimli strode forward undeterred, and found that the water was shallow, no more than ankle-deep at the edge. Behind him they walked in file, threading their way with care, for under the weedy pools were sliding and greasy stones, and footing was treacherous. Frodo shuddered with disgust at the touch of the dark, unclean water on his feet. As Sam, the last of the company, led Bill up onto the dry ground on the far side, there came a soft sound, a swish, followed by a plop, as if a fish had disturbed the still surface of the water. Turning quickly, they saw ripples, black-edged with shadow in the waning light. Great rings were widening outwards from a point far out in the lake. There was a bubbling noise, and then silence. The dusk deepened, and the last gleams of the sunset were veiled in cloud. Gandalf now pressed on at a great pace, and the others followed as quickly as they could. They reached the strip of land between the lake and the cliffs. It was narrow, often hardly a dozen yards across, and unencumbered with fallen rocks and stones, but they found a way, hugging the cliff, and keeping as far from the dark water as they might. A mile southwards along the shore they came upon holly trees. Stumps and dead boughs were rotting in the shallows, the remains, it seemed, of old thickets, or of a hedge that had once lined the road across the drowned valley. But close under the cliff there stood, still strong and living, two tall trees, larger than any trees of holly that Frodo had ever seen or imagined. Their great roots spread from the wall to the water. Under the looming cliffs they had looked like mere bushes, when seen far off from the top of the stair, but now they towered overhead, stiff, dark, and silent, throwing deep night shadows about their feet, standing like sentinel pillars at the end of the road.
"Well, here we are at last," said Gandalf. "Here the elven way from Holin ended. Holly was the token of the people of that land, and they planted it here to mark the end of their domain, for the west door was made chiefly for their use in their traffic with the lords of Moria. Those were happier days, when there was still close friendship at times between folk of different race, even between dwarves and elves."
"It was not the fault of the dwarves that the friendship waned," said Gimli.
"I have not heard that it was the fault of the elves," said Legolas.
"I have heard both," said Gandalf, "and I will not give judgment now, but I beg you two, Legolas and Gimli, at least to be friends and to help me. I need you both. The doors are shut and hidden, and the sooner we find them, the better. Night is at hand."
Turning to the others, he said,
"While I'm searching, will you each make ready to enter the mines? For here, I fear, we must say farewell to our good beast of burden. You must lay aside much of the stuff that we brought against bitter weather. You will not need it inside, nor, I hope, when we come through and journey on down into the south. Instead, each of us must take a share of what the pony carried, especially the food and the water skins."
"But you can't leave poor old Bill behind in this forsaken place, Mr. Gandalf," cried Sam, angry and distressed. "I won't have it, and that's flat. After he's come so far and all—"
"I'm sorry, Sam," said the wizard, "but when the door's open, I don't think you'll be able to drag your Bill inside into the long dark of Moria. You'll have to choose between Bill and your master."
"He'd follow Mr. Frodo into a dragon's den if I let him," protested Sam. "It'd be nothing short of murder to turn him loose with all these wolves about."
"It will be short of murder, I hope," said Gandalf. He laid his hand on the pony's head and spoke in a low voice. "Go with words of guard and guiding on you," he said. "You are a wise beast and have learned much in Rivendell. Make your ways to places where you can find grass, and so come in time to Elrond's house or wherever you wish to go. There, Sam, he'll have quite as much chance of escaping wolves and getting home as we have."
Sam stood sullenly by the pony and returned no answer. Bill, seeming to understand well what was going on, nuzzled up to him, putting his nose to Sam's ear. Sam burst into tears and fumbled with the straps, unlading all the pony's packs and throwing them on the ground. The others sorted out the goods, making a pile of all that could be left behind and dividing up the rest. When this was done, they turned to watch Gandalf. He appeared to have done nothing. He was standing between the two trees, gazing at the blank wall of the cliff, as if he would bore a hole into it with his eyes. Gimli was wandering about, tapping the stone here and there with his axe. Legolas was pressed against the rock, as if listening.
"Well, here we are and all ready," said Merry. "But where are the doors? I can't see any sign of them."
"Dwarf doors are not made to be seen when shut," said Gimli. "They are invisible, and their own masters cannot find them or open them if their secret is forgotten."
"But this door was not made to be a secret known only to dwarves," said Gandalf.
coming suddenly to life and turning round. "Unless things are altogether changed, eyes that know what to look for may discover the signs." He walked forward to the wall. Right between the shadow of the trees there was a smooth space, and over this he passed his hands to and fro, muttering words under his breath. Then he stepped back.
"Look," he said, "can you see anything now?"
The moon now shone upon the grey face of the rock, but they could see nothing else for a while. Then slowly on the surface, where the wizard's hands had passed, faint lines appeared, like slender veins of silver running in the stone. At first they were no more than pale gossamer threads, so fine that they only twinkled fitfully where the moon caught them. But steadily they grew broader and clearer, until their design could be guessed. At the top, as high as Gandalf could reach, was an arch of interlacing letters in an elvish character. Below, though the threads were in places blurred or broken, the outline could be seen of an anvil and a hammer, surmounted by a crown with seven stars. Beneath these again were two trees, each bearing crescent moons. More clearly than all else, there shone forth in the middle of the door a single star with many rays.
"There are the emblems of Durin," cried Gimli.
"And there is the tree of the High Elves," said Legolas.
"And the star of the House of Feanor," said Gandalf.
"They are wrought of Ithildan that mirrors only starlight and moonlight, and sleeps until it is touched by one who speaks words now long forgotten in Middle-earth. It is long since I heard them, and I thought deeply before I could recall them to my mind."
"What does the writing say?" asked Frodo, who was trying to decipher the inscription on the arch. "I thought I knew the elf letters, but I can't read these."
"The words are in the elven tongue of the west of Middle-earth in the elder days," answered Gandalf. "But they do not say anything of importance to us. They say only, 'The doers of Durin, Lord of Moria, speak, friend, and enter.' And underneath, small and faint, is written, 'I, Narvi, made them.' Celebrimbor of Holin drew these signs."
"What does it mean by 'speak, friend, and enter'?" asked Merry.
"That is plain enough," said Gimli. "If you are a friend, speak the password, and the doors will open, and you can enter."
"Yes," said Gandalf.
"These doors are probably governed by words. Some dwarf gates will open only at special times, or for particular persons, and some have locks and keys that are still needed when all necessary times and words are known. These doors have no key. In the days of Durin, they were not secret. They usually stood open, and door wards sat here. But if they were shut, any who knew the opening word could speak it and pass in. At least, so it is recorded, is it not, Gimli?"
"It is," said the dwarf. "But what the word was is not remembered. Narvi and his craft and all his kindred have vanished from the earth."
"But do not you know the word, Gandalf?" asked Boromir in surprise.
"No," said the wizard. The others looked dismayed. Only Aragorn, who knew Gandalf well, remained silent and unmoved.
"Then what was the use of bringing us to this accursed spot?" cried Boromir, glancing back with a shudder at the dark water. "You told us that you had passed through the mines. How could that be, if you did not know how to enter?"
"The answer to your first question, Boromir," said the wizard, "is that I do not know the word yet. But we shall soon see. And," he added, with a glint in his eyes under their bristling brows, "you may ask what is the use of my deeds when they are proved useless. As for your other question, do you doubt my tale, or have you no wits left? I did not enter this way. I came from the east. If you wish to know, I will tell you that these doors open outwards. From the inside you may thrust them open with your hands. From the outside nothing will move them save the spell of command. They cannot be forced inwards."
"What are you going to do, then?" asked Pippin, undaunted by the wizard's bristling brows.
"Knock on the doors with your head, Peregrine Took,"
said Gandalf.
"But if that does not shatter them, and I am allowed a little peace from foolish questions, I will seek for the opening words. I once knew every spell in all the tongues of elves or men or orcs that was ever used for such a purpose. I can still remember 80 of them without searching in my mind, but only a few trials, I think, will be needed, and I shall not have to call on Gimli for words of the secret dwarf tongue that they teach to none. The opening words were elvish, like the writing on the arch. That seems certain."
He stepped up to the rock again, and lightly touched with his staff the silver star in the middle beneath the sign of the anvil.
"Annonethelen edrohiamen, fenas nogothrem lasto bethlamen,"
he said in a commanding voice. The silver lines faded, but the blank grey stone did not stir. Many times he repeated these words in different order, or varied them. Then he tried other spells, one after another, speaking now faster and louder, now soft and slow. Then he spoke many single words of elvish speech. Nothing happened. The cliff towered into the night. The countless stars were kindled. The wind blew cold.